Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. From trapping to non-meandering waters, the South Dakota Game, Fish, and Parks Commission has a full agenda for this week's meetings in Spearfish. The meetings convene at the Holiday Inn Convention Center. Call to order is at 1 p.m. Mountain Time, and you can also listen online at sd.net. Today, we welcome South Dakota GFP Deputy Secretary Kevin Wobling for a preview. Secretary Wobling, thanks for being here.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate it, Lori.
All right, let's start. This is a pretty full agenda. What do you anticipate some of the top items of interest for South Dakota outdoor lovers might be?
Yeah, some of the things we will be discussing at this upcoming meeting are the zebra mussel response plan. That'll be a big one. Now that we found zebra mussels in Lake Sharp, we likely suspect them to be in Francis Case as well. We'll have a significant amount of time dedicated from this meeting to zebra mussels and how we plan to respond to the spread of those zebra mussels up the Missouri River. Some other things we'll talk about, the Hunt for Habitat, the Second Century Initiative, just kind of some updates regarding those things. And then, like you said at the beginning of the call here, trapping regulations, that'll be something as well that will be highly discussed in looking at trap check times, looking at trap ID tags, those sorts of things. We received a petition requesting those additional requirements on traps here just recently, so those will be also be on the agenda. So very, very busy agenda, and then a parks fee discussion will also occur at this upcoming commission meeting, and there'll be a lot of discussion on the parks budget and some of the flood damage we received over the last few months with the weather we've had.
Right. It's been a really wild year in South Dakota for sure, and I'm wondering if we could start with some of those Second Century Initiative updates, and how did some of that weather and flooding impact some of the habitat programs that when Governor Kristi Noem came in, you know, there were some efforts moving forward, and then we had this wonky weather and plenty of flooding. Has there been an impact?
You know, yes, there has been. There's about 3.8 million acres of unplanted crops in South Dakota that some of those acres went into prevent plant acres. Some of those acres were also the same acres we were looking for to put in the Second Century Habitat Working Lands Program, setting aside those marginal lands and putting those marginal lands into perennial grass, taking them out of row crop production. So that has had an impact on enrollments. We do have over 500 to 600 acres currently enrolled in the Second Century Habitat Working Lands Program. You know, however, there's other programs out there, too, that fall under the umbrella of the Second Century Initiative, and they're exciting as well, you know, planting trees, planting food plots, putting in fences, those sorts of things. And all of our private lands programs, they're doing well. There's a lot of interest. We have a lot of folks out there, boots on the ground, talking to producers, talking to landowners to, you know, to make sure the opportunity is known to folks that are interested in enrolling lands in a habitat or conservation type program.
One of the efforts was also to seek some of those innovative ideas through crowdsourcing and a Facebook page, asking people for some winning ideas. What kind of response have you gotten?
You know, it was really great to have so many folks participate in that discussion. We had over 1,000 entries per se, 700 on our Habitat Pays website, and another few hundred through Facebook and the other avenues of email. We have about a list of 12 ideas right now, the top 12 ideas we are going to be discussing with Governor Noem and her staff very soon, and then with the commission. So in the next couple months, we'll actually announce those winners. We plan to do it at the October commission meeting, and not this one coming up, but the October one. And it's exciting to have this many folks engaged in habitat across the state, passionate about habitat, and passionate about ensuring the next generation, you know, cares about wildlife and habitat and wildlife management.
How do you sort of keep that conversation going? Do you reinitiate the program once now that you've sort of seen the kind of response that it had?
Yeah, I think the opportunities are endless there regarding that focus, that excitement, the re-energizing folks, you know, and having habitat be a conversation piece at the coffee table is exactly what we're looking for. As we all know, to raise more wildlife in South Dakota, I mean, habitat is key, and that's something that Governor Noem and her staff and us as a department are very focused on and very excited to be part of. I mean, this is a very exciting time for South Dakota.
Let's talk about the Nest Predator Bounty Program, because that closed early August 12th, and it really was one of those initiatives of Governor Noem's that was criticized. People criticized the transparency, the money, the effectiveness of the program. How do you at GFP sort of see the success and failures of that program? How do you evaluate it?
Yeah, so actually, you know, looking at how many families we got outdoors, that's the real measure of success. Looking at the participation, looking at sustaining our trapping heritage for many generations to come, that's success. And that really is what we've seen with the program over, you know, the entirety of those months it was in implementation mode. You know, we received 54,000 tails, in a very quick manner. And really, at the end of the day, over 5,000 different individuals participated. Just a really neat deal to hear some of the stories and to hear, you know, some of the success stories of getting those kids outside, getting those families outdoors, and having an event that kids participated with mom and dad in a positive manner. And that was what we heard a lot of, and that was really great to hear and see. Our trapping heritage, you know, across the nation is on the decline. I mean, there's less and less trappers every year, and we held some education courses, Trapping 101 courses, along with the distribution of live traps, along with the bounty program. And all in all, I mean, people are excited about trapping right now, and it's really neat to see that part of the success of the program. We do plan to send a survey out to folks, ask them, you know, did they enjoy the program? Did they participate? What were the highlights? What were the failures? Those sorts of things to measure success and to see once, you know, what 2020 looks like down the road. But all in all, a very exciting program. And it did. It got folks involved in trapping that never trapped before. So it's exactly what we were trying to accomplish.
Early on, when we talked about that program with Secretary Kelly Hepler, and when I was in Pierre, the primary goal of the program was really to protect the nesting areas. Do you think you accomplished that? Because that was one of the things that was really criticized for. I think the department has said celebrating getting people outdoors, there might have been other ways to do that versus the $10 tail a bounty. Do you think it was successful as far as habitat protection goes?
You know, if you remove predators at a fine scale at a very high density during the nesting season, the literature does suggest you can influence pheasant nest success. If you look at the statewide snapshot, if those animals were taken, you know, distribution-wise across the landscape equally, you might not have had such a large impact on pheasant nest success or waterfowl nest success. But we do know the majority of those tails did come from eastern South Dakota. I do suspect some of those tails came from, you know, specific properties, and maybe there was instances where folks did remove 20 or 30 raccoons or skunks, possums, those other nest predators that were on the list, you know, from a quarter section of land or in some cases a smaller area. And in those cases, yes, I mean, removing those predators during that nest season at a high density on a small area should have influenced nest success in a positive manner.
Any other lessons learned from that program as far as, you know, when you saw some of the criticism as well? Did you learn lessons early on or as you went as far as what you might do differently next time?
Yeah, no, we're in the evaluation stage, really, and just keeping our options open. And, you know, there's always things looking back, some of the things, you know, just the overall awareness of the program. It was up and running April 1st, and there wasn't a lot of discussion, you know, early on with the commission, and that was something we'd like to go back and do over, you know, as far as having those discussions more open and transparent. Yeah, absolutely. There's never too much of that. So that would be something if we were to implement in 2020, those discussions would most definitely occur. And all in all, though, I mean, it was a very successful program. And staff within GF&P did a great job receiving those tails. And we just thank all the participants for participating. And that's what made it such a success.
Let's talk about the auction for a bighorn sheep hunting license that opened August 29th. It closes in September. Give us the details of the program, and let's talk about some early response there.
Yeah, so the bighorn sheep auction license, is that what you're referring to now?
Yes.
Or the hunt for habitat?
Nope, the auction license for the bighorn sheep auction.
Yep, so the bighorn sheep auction license did just open here in the last few days. The Wild Sheep Foundation is going to be conducting the online auction. It's actually on their website. They're conducting the marketing. They're conducting, you know, the actual auction itself. It'll be closing towards the end of September. So it will be open for a few weeks here to come. And it's a pretty exciting deal. We have some incredible rams within South Dakota. Obviously, we are the world record holder right now. That ram that was harvested last year out of the unit adjacent to the Badlands National Park. And there are some really phenomenal rams still there. And staff have photographed a few of those rams. They're actually on the Midwest Sheep Auction page, and folks that are interested can take a look there. And yeah, it's really exciting. Half of those, you know, the $85,000 of that auction money will go towards bighorn sheep management and research. That's actually the average that we've seen over the last 7 years with that license. The remaining funds, half would go to GPA management, and the other half would be going to the Second Century Habitat Fund Board, where they would be then really looking at using those dollars for habitat on private and public lands. So all great causes, all great things, and we're looking forward to seeing what that auction brings.
So do you have a sense throughout the auction period that it's open and what kind of response you're getting or what the bids are?
Not yet. I mean, there has been some major interest in this auction license. I mean, I've talked to folks individually, you know, that said it could easily bring $300,000-$500,000 potentially based on the caliber of ram out there. But it's really hard to say. I mean, it's a neat opportunity. But yeah, it's too early on to really know what that auction license will bring. We're hoping it will contribute quite a few dollars to just not only bighorn sheep research and management, but habitat across the state.
And what exactly do you win? I mean, tell me about that.
Yeah, so the auction itself is an opportunity to hunt a bighorn sheep during the 2020 season, not this season, but the 2020 season, in the Elk Mountain unit and also the unit adjacent to Badlands National Park, the same unit where the world record sheep was harvested out of. Along with that is an invitation to hunt with Governor Noem during the pheasant hunt, during this season, actually, the 2019 pheasant hunt. So some great things there, some great opportunities for those that are interested in harvesting, in this case, a world-class ram.
All right. So is there a regular season for this, or other people?
There is, yeah. So actually, a lucky South Dakota hunter also is going to be able to hunt that same unit, and it's through a weighted lottery draw, similar to deer licenses, similar to elk licenses. So there is one license for the Badlands adjacent park unit that is valid this year, and that's who had the license last year, was a lucky lottery winner there. It's just a raffle, or not a raffle, it's just put your name in the draw for $10 and see once. You know, there we had, I think, believe 4,000 or 5,000 folks apply for that license last year. And then we do have a couple licenses available on Elk Mountain as well, open to South Dakota residents. So there is general licenses in those units as well. They're hard to draw because of the demand. But yes, absolutely, there are opportunities for South Dakota residents to get those licenses as well.
All right, let's shift gears a little bit and talk about non-meandering waters. So for folks who don't remember, there was this House Bill 1001, there was an open waters compromise, and this is all about access to water and then landowners' rights to sort of close those spaces. Tell us where we're at that right now. Do we have a number for acres that are open or are closed, for example?
Yeah, so in South Dakota, you know, the number of accessible non-meandered waters, and I say accessible, you know, they're up against a public road right away or something to that extent, folks have access to them, was right around 244,000 acres. That's the number of non-meandered waters accessible to the public that we know that we have quantified over the last couple of years. Of those 244,000 acres, only 2,995 acres have been marked closed. So less than, you know, 2% of those acres are marked closed at this time. And it's been, you know, we've had as much as 5,000 acres closed. And we've been around this 2,995 acre mark, just under 3,000 acres for the last, I want to say, 6-8 months. So it's been very successful. We've had a ton of opportunity here in South Dakota to fish. The high water levels have created more non-meandered waters. We should probably redo the analysis as to how many acres are available. because of the fact we have so many acres now that have been inundated, that weren't inundated since about 2010. That water has receded, but now it has come back up. So yeah, I mean, all in all, the Recreation and Respect campaign has been excellent. The Adopt a Lake program has been excellent. Working with landowners, working with sportsmen and women across the state. And what it comes down to, we just want to ensure there's opportunity for folks, and while also meeting the needs of those landowners and addressing the concerns of those landowners. And I think the balance has been very good, and the legislation is working.
That was a big compromise. It was not easy to get to that compromise, and by the nature of any compromise, pretty much everybody was unhappy with it at first, because that's maybe the hallmark of a good compromise. Are landowners still petitioning for closures? How is that process working now, especially with the flooding?
So if a landowner wishes to close their a piece of non-meandered water, they would just contact the department. The department would supply them signs. If the closure needed buoys, the landowner would have to purchase those buoys. There's specific type buoys that are in rule that they need to use to close non-meandered waters. And then we'd get those closures up on the maps. If there's access concerns, if there's garbage being left behind, if there's, gates or muddy roads, those sorts of things, we, the department, want to work with that landowner to try to mitigate those issues, try to put up signs ourselves. Send out media blasts or email blasts to anglers to try to really self-police ourselves. And it all comes down to recreation and respect, respecting the land, respecting the water, respecting that landowner, so we can continue the recreational opportunities we have in the state.
You mentioned at the beginning of our conversation the zebra mussel response plan. That's going to be a big issue at the upcoming meeting. Tell us a little bit about the department's response to this challenge.
Yes, quite the challenge it is. A couple of things we need to start off here. We have a 30-day action plan that we're just getting off the ground, and this was essentially when we heard we had zebra mussels in Lake Sharp and likely in Francis Case. We haven't confirmed them there yet, but we suspect they're there because downstream effect, obviously. So the first thing we need to do is, identify those priority waters. What waters are directly at stake of being infested, and Lake Oahe's top on the list. Waters West River are top on the list. And we have a lot of waters in South Dakota that we do not have zebra mussels in. So we have a pretty tall order here, and the list of priority waters is quite large. Some of the things we plan to do, stationary billboards, 3x5 banners, we'd like to get those up here in the next couple weeks, and we have some up already. Working with the Department of Transportation on digital billboards, signs that are along I-90, along in the interstate there, just letting folks know, hey, this is we have zebra mussels here. Be cognizant. Drain your boats. Dry your boats. Those sorts of things. Getting that message out. Mobile ads targeted through geo-referencing. So when somebody launches a boat at an access point, they get a little notification on their smartphone saying, hey, pull your plug, drain your water, dump your bait, those sorts of things. Governor Noem did a public service announcement, great message out to anglers, very engaging, very, very neat to see our governor engage in this process, keeping our lakes a treasure in South Dakota, and that's the whole goal, is to make sure we do all we can to keep those zebra mussels where they're at. Looking at a plan to implement a decontamination service for those boats, in the marinas that have been sitting in those slips, those boat slips for all summer long, we'd like to make sure those boats in particular get decontaminated by 140-degree water. That's very important before they get put into storage or before they get put into a different body of water. Looking to help in that process. There's a lot of opportunity to hold public meetings to make sure folks are aware, make sure folks are educated, and make sure our outreach efforts are as good as we can possibly make them. And that's the whole goal. We have to be in this together. This zebra mussels, their biggest and greatest impact is really for surface water users, municipal water facilities, irrigators, folks that use water to irrigate, the industrial cooling system type stuff. There's a lot of large surface water systems that can spend hundreds of thousands of dollars to try to mitigate the impacts of zebra mussels because they attach to the pipes, they attach to pretty much any surface. Metal surfaces are highly attracted But that's the main concern, is those surface water users, so folks that are utilizing water out of the Missouri River at this time.
All right. And you also mentioned changes to trapping regulations and some petitions to adjust trap time checking and IDs. Tell us a little bit about what you anticipate that conversation to be at the upcoming commission meeting.
Yeah, so there was a petition received by the commission to change our trap check times to 24 hours. Right now it is essentially 3 midnights past the day you set the trap, so it could be 3.5 days West River, and it's 2 midnights on the east side of the state, so it is different east versus west, so it's essentially 48 hours on the east side or 2.5 days. So there is a petition in front of the commission in the form of a proposal as well. There was a work group put together that included 4 commissioners and some members of the public to discuss both trap check times and trap ID. We as a department are going to recommend that trap ID tags are not necessary at this time. On the other side, we have the trap check times, and we don't think trap check times need to be shortened as a department either. So those would be the 2 department recommendations we'd bring to the table. And it'll be a good discussion, I'm sure, at this spearfish meeting here tomorrow.
All right. Tell me why you don't think those check times should be changed.
A lot of it comes down to, the ethics of trapping, obviously, are at question. That's what is being challenged right now. And it really is up to that trapper. I mean, some trappers check their trap line every day, some every other day. Some run really long sets, 200-300 traps at a time, and it's just not feasible. Sometimes the weather doesn't allow folks to run traps. If you get gumbo roads, gumbo can be a real problem checking traps. So there's a lot of complexities regarding checking that trap line. And, our trappers, they're ethical folks. I mean, there's definitely, there is that societal pass to continue trapping and continue our trapping heritage, and they're aware of that, and they're going to do what's best and what's right for the animal.
All right. Kevin Roebling is South Dakota GFP Deputy Secretary. Those meetings in Spearfish are at the Holiday Inn Convention Center. Call to orders at 1 p.m. Mountain tomorrow for the South Dakota Game, Fish, and Parks Commission. You can also listen online at sd.net. Kevin, thanks so much for being here. We appreciate your time.
Yes, thank you. You have a fantastic day.